The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to A Sharp Outlook, Best Practices for Success with host Angela Sharp. Today's program features expert guests, industry insights, and the experience of your host, all coming together to help you take control of your company and move your business to the next level. Now, here's your host, Angela Sharp.
Hello, and thank you for tuning in to A Sharp Outlook. Today we're going to talk about building relationships beyond the point of sale. We are entering a post-transactional era in business where relationships are important. This is a time when people expect to have an honest dialogue and relationship with organizations beyond a single point of sale. Yet, there are few ways to actually do this authentically. Network thinking means that you focus on relationships for the long term and then go and build them in partnership with your customers. This allows you to create points of exchange with people repeatedly over time rather than one-time transaction. Network thinking is beyond a one-time sale. It results in champions of your brand that come back again and again to be a part of something bigger than a single purchase. They become part of your community. Imagine the idea of networks becoming something very real and delivering measurable results. An active community is the surest path to faster innovation at a lower cost, key stakeholder buy-in, storytellers, and critical intelligence for strategic decisions. Join us for this lively discussion on how to build relationships beyond that point of sale. Today, we have a guest, Robert Q. Benedict. He's a partner and design strategist at Context Partners. As a founding member of Context Partners, a social innovation design firm, Mr. Benedict designs networks, challenges, and prizes, as well as network-based business strategies. His clients currently include Nike's Girl Effect, the Rockefeller Foundation, and the Black Male Engagement, BME. Since 2007, Mr. Benedict has worked growing social entrepreneurs from at Ashoka and then at Context Partners. As a team of entrepreneurs, design thinkers, and brand innovators, they understand how an engaged community can drive business forward. What brings us all together? Our beliefs in the power of relationships and expertise in the art and science of community-centered design. He sees networks as the key for building relationships between organizations, their customers, grantees, and clients that create long-term results. Formerly of Ashoka, Mr. Benedict holds an undergraduate degree in design and a master's of science in organizational management, and he currently lives in New York City. Welcome, Robert.
Great. Thanks for having me this morning, Angela.
Great. I'm really excited to talk about this topic because I know when I go out to do shopping and things, I find that personal connection is kind of missing. So how does a business build relationships beyond a transaction?
It's a really good question, Angela, and I think that where it starts with is understanding and having a relationship with the consumer. So the way people have oriented and organized themselves for the past couple of years has been driving people to a single point of sale. Everything funnels down to that, whether that's human-centered design around designing a product. It's centered on the product or that moment in time when somebody makes a purchase. What the way forward is considering your relationship with your consumer, considering your relationship with your customer or grantee, and building a relationship that yields the kind of interaction that delivers multiple points of sale over time that really fit those needs. It's always more expensive to acquire new customers than keep than keep ones you have. And so what we do when we do community center design is we look at what are these relationships, what are these interactions between folks, and how do we capture and participate with people who we're doing business with in a way that repeats and delivers value to them again and again, while also delivering value to the organization.
Yeah, it really seems like it's a concept that I experienced. I'm from old school, and I experienced that personal relationship that happened between me and the company, I mean, the company or the store or whatever, because they can work in companies, working with staff, but it also, you know, you have a store, you have a business or whatever, having that personal relationship, it made me drive miles just to do business with them because it made me feel that they actually cared about me. So what is Context Partners?
So Context Partners is a social innovation design firm, and what that means is we design with communities and with our clients directly. We don't believe in a one-size-fits-all solution, and so as compared to a user-centered design firm or an agency, what we do is constantly develop relationships with our clients and their stakeholders and design with them and iterate with them and change with them.
Mm-hmm.
We have the advantage of working with folks over time, and some of our clients have been with us several years. And what we've been able to do is, as the market changes, as the communities change, and as the community's needs change, to continually realign ourselves with those in order to maintain and serve both the relationship to the client and the relationship to the community. We use a community-centered design methodology, and we focus that in three areas. We focus on employee engagement. We focus on, so building your community internally. We focus on crowdsourcing innovation. So how does innovation come from your community members, and how do they take part in building your organization with you? And then a third, we do member engagement, where if you already have a community but you're not really sure how to develop relationships with them that grow with your business, we help you do that as well. So those are the three main areas of things we do. And we've done this with folks at several foundations. I think one of the ones that, and commercial businesses as well, I think one of the ones near and dear to my heart is the Black Male Engagement, where we've developed networks in Detroit, Philadelphia, of Black men who are assets to their community and who are changing the way that service is done in those communities.
Mm-hmm. So it's you're working with businesses and bringing that personal touch, or showing them how to have that personal touch to actually drive the business or retain the customers. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. I think the struggle we find in most large organizations is they've gotten to scale. They are, you know, multi-million-dollar organizations that have a hard time going, you know what, we need to get back in a relationship with the folks that made us that way, that brought us to this point of multi-million dollars. But we really don't have a mechanism to do that at scale.
Mm-hmm.
So they come to us and say, you know, we've realized that a network is the pathway to creating that relationship to our consumer at scale, but we really don't know how to do that. We realize that push marketing, that sending messages out there is the old way of doing things,
mm-hmm.
and gets people to that single point of sale, but it doesn't lead to those long-term relationships that got us to the success we see in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So for our clients, they're seeing this moment when, because of the web, because of the spread of information, there's a heightened expectation among their community members of the level of involvement they have. And they also want that. They're also really excited about that. I've had clients who say, you know, I don't want to be, you know, writing checks or having checks written to me. I want to be out there. I want to be a catalyst. I want to be engaged with the people who want to engage with us.
Mm-hmm.
And we build the networks that provide the means to do that.
So what you're saying, we're a little bit beyond just sending out discount coupons.
You know, we really are. We really are. I think that the discount coupon doesn't establish a relationship. It gets
right.
people to buy something once. We think that's fine. But that's not what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And we think that really the key to lifelong engagement with folks is through co-design, is through community center design, is through these authentic relationships. And I'll be the first one to tell you, this is hard. This is not easy. Building networks of people interacting is something that we've learned through some great successes. And then we've also had some failures that we've learned from along the way, and that it's kind of taught us, okay, these are the things you do need to do, and these are the things that you want to focus on to make these successful.
So what is your particular role at Context Partners?
So I'm a design strategist with Context Partners. I focus on the I do a lot of network strategy. So what is your network for? How does it align with your vision, the vision for your business? How does it fit in with the other things you have going on? And then how do you set some goals and objectives for what that network should deliver, both for your consumer and for your organization over a number of years? So at Context Partners, I do that primarily. I also have designed challenges to engage your consumer in helping them participate with you in co-designing how you do business. So I've done these for the past 7 years for a number of clients. And what the challenge tool lets you do is initiate that relationship with your consumer, your target market at scale. Mm-hmm. So if you're in a point where, you know you need to build relationships, challenges can be a great mechanism to initiate those relationships and drive participation.
Oh, yeah.
And put you in a relationship with your consumer.
Mm-hmm. It makes them feel involved not only in the community, but with, you know, the business itself, with the business owner. It makes them, you know, just feel like you care. And, hey, I'm someone that's counting. I'm not just, you know, a ring up on the cash register. So I can see where that would really start building a network of community members. And really, it would help in the case where you wouldn't have to worry so much about competition, because one thing I've learned over the years that if someone is loyal, it doesn't matter about the discounts, it doesn't matter about, you know, the fancy store, it matters about that personal touch. And so this just makes them really want to drive across town like I did to go there, just because I felt like I was part of, you know, that store, and they cared about what I liked and did not like, and they, I know they probably wrote down, you know, what I purchased, what I like, things like that, and kind of had like a card about me. But the fact that they did write this down meant that they actually cared about what I like. And they would say, you know what, I was thinking of you, and I set this aside, and, you know, and that really made me feel special. I think feeling special really means something. It has a value.
It does. And I think that feeling special and those little things are, you know, there's those stores you drive to, and I think it's partially because those stores are involved in your story and you feel involved in theirs. I know for the places that I frequent, that I have that kind of relationship, there's something bigger than a sale going on. Mm-hmm. There's always a sale going on, and I'm definitely not saying that that's not the medium through which business keeps going. But what I am saying is, when I think of folks who I go back to time and time again, and when I see people who can develop long-term relationships, they are creating a bigger story and a bigger conversation, or sometimes they're creating a movement around a network. And so, you know, it's I think back to the early days of Apple, when you felt like you were part of something. You were part of something, a small, subtle revolution when you bought Apple products and you started to have a relationship with Apple. Mm-hmm. And I think that when you look at really successful organizations who have built long-term relationships, there is a bigger story that people become part in, that they participate in, that they have an interaction. Mm-hmm. And there's a true partnership between the consumer and the product producer. And I think that the expectation of that is only going to increase over time.
Oh, yeah. It sounds like you have a real passion for what you're doing. Why do you have such a passion about this?
That's a good question. I love to see my clients succeed. Context Partners loves to see our clients succeed, and we feel like we do have a very specific view of the world, and that is that networks and relationships create the kind of success that benefits both community and organizations and commercial businesses.
Mm-hmm.
We believe firmly that the way forward for the country and business and across the world is to develop these relationships that provide mutual benefit to the consumer and to the business or organization. And I think that mutual benefit is really, really important to how we move forward together. And so in my life, I think that every time I've seen that mutual benefit in play, I've seen both parties come away with something that helps them succeed in ways that they've defined, but also helps build that bigger story about something that we're doing together. Mm-hmm. And I think that together is really key.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things that when you're saying that, you know, your passion is going in actually building this relationship, it makes me remember the corner store that we went to, and the owner knew everyone's name in the neighborhood, knew not only our parents, but knew the children, knew the grandparents. It's like everyone just kind of grew up with this particular store. And there were other stores that were further away. I mean, the larger grocery stores and things like that where you could get items at a cheaper price. But it was because that store owner knew who we were. You just felt safe. You felt safe going in there. You felt like that person cared. You felt like you weren't going to be taken advantage of. And it just really made a difference as far as our shopping experience. It was just totally, totally different. And one thing, you know, I just want to add one thing about building that community and actually knowing who your consumers are. You won't be making mistakes in buying products because they're going to be telling you what they like and don't like and what they want and they don't want because a lot of, you know, businesses get, you know, products pushed on them and, let's go try this out. And it ends up being a bust and they get stuck with products that they can't sell or even give away because they don't even know who their consumers are. They have a bunch of demographic information, but it's not personal. And it doesn't say what that person really likes, you know. So,
absolutely. And I think what you're pointing to there, Angela, is the fact that by knowing and having a relationship with people, you actually reduce risk. You reduce risk of things like excess inventory. You reduce risk of marketing campaigns that fall flat because you didn't actually have a relationship with the folks who were going to be on the receiving end of that campaign. I remember talking to one of my community members before I talked to a client one time about a specific campaign, and his insights were critical to the point that I can guarantee had we moved forward with that campaign, it would have not been successful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the other thing I hear you saying that I think is really, really important is there's a level of trust. There's a level of intimacy that we all want as human beings. We all desire that from each other. And that experience is something that customers really genuinely want from the organizations that they buy products and services from. And in the philanthropic world, it's something that grantees really want from foundations that do the same.
Right. Absolutely. And that's something, like I said, it's something that I personally understand it because I expect it. You know, you work a lot of hours to earn money, and you've put your life into it. So when you go and you want to shop, you want to shop someplace where someone understands how much value has been placed into what you're getting ready to spend. And it's really, really vital that those relationships, you know, are not only built, but they're, you know, they continue. We're getting ready to go to a break, but when we come back, we're going to talk more about how your company works in the community.
Great.
Okay.
Business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
Do you want to know what's really going on these days? Well, Capital Thinking takes you inside the worlds of policy, politics, law, and business. What happens in Washington, on Wall Street, and in our nation's legal system impacts your business every day. We're taking you on a behind-the-scenes tour of all of it. Each week, we bring you unfiltered conversation with a variety of influential policymakers, lawyers, and business leaders. I'm Kevin O'Neill, and I'm your host as Capital Thinking tours the halls of power. Join me for Capital Thinking on the Voice America Business Network each Thursday at noon Eastern and 9 a.m. Pacific Time.
The way we do banking today continues to evolve. No longer is it just brick-and-mortar locations or traditional banker's hours. Today, banking is 24/7. It's in the home. It's on the go. It's digital. Tune in to Breaking Banks with Brett King for a look at how traditional banking as we know it has changed due to a loss of trust, changing economic conditions and consumer behavior, government involvement, and, of course, technology. What does it all mean? Listen every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific, on the Voice America Business Channel.
We're always talking business.
Talk to an expert.
Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to A Sharp Outlook. To reach Angela Sharp or today's guest, please call into the program at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You may also send email to asharpeoutlook@gmail.com or tweet the program at asharpcons. Now, back to the program.
Well, we're back, and I just want to get further into how Context Partners works in the communities. So how do you?
It's a great question. So what we do is we have a phase to every one of our projects called Discover and Design. And really what this means is we go to communities that our clients want to have relationships with. We go there, we spend extensive time there, we develop relationships. The reason we call it Discover and not Research is because this is really about identifying and finding people that are great relationship matches with our clients. So I, you know, in the example would be me, we would go and spend time in Philadelphia and Detroit, spending time with folks where they're at, whether that's a church, whether that's a place of business, whether that's their community center, or whether that's their home. And when then we come back, we do it again and again. We put together a design based on what we've heard from the community, and then we take it back to that community and say, did we get it right? Mm-hmm. Did we actually understand what you were talking about and what we needed? And I think that that is what sets us apart. And we do that ongoing throughout our different client engagements.
Mm-hmm. So when you say you go like to Philadelphia and to Detroit, are there any specific types of communities that you're working with or?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It really depends on our client. So when we go to Philadelphia and Detroit, we were doing that for the Knight Foundation, for the Black Male Engagement, for Be Me. Mm-hmm. And we were going into African American communities there that had indicated interest in being a part of this. And so it really depends on what kind of community that our client is trying to serve and what kind of communities are interested in being in partnership with our clients. In the case of folks like the Nike Foundation, I've been to Ethiopia and Nigeria, talking to folks there as well. And so there's always an alignment between the community and what the client's looking for in terms of how do we understand and start getting in relationship with these communities.
Okay. So in other words, they're actually trying to build a relationship before they actually go and bring their business to that particular community to make sure they actually do have a good match as far as what the community wants, what they're able to provide. Is that what you're saying here?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think, you know, No, not all products work with all communities. Not all services work with all communities, and our clients want to be really, really sure, especially when something's has a social orientation to it, that this is a right fit for this community, that this is meaningful for them, and that this is relevant. I can tell you, you know, I've gone into communities and they've said, oh yeah, I can tell you what did work. These folks came in, little fly by night, little single flash in the pan, and then they were out, and they didn't develop authentic relationships with us. And that's not what we're looking for.
And that, and I know that that happens a lot, like I said, in some of your rural communities or some of your urban communities. You just have someone who just, you know, opens a store or, you know, decides, oh, this product will work because, you know, they have decided that because of the demographics, of course this will work. So let's just go in there and make money. And it's not about actually being a part of the community. It's just to go in and, you know, make money, sell some products, sell some goods, sell some service. I know that, and I don't mean to be negative, but I know there are a lot of government programs that go into communities, and I sometimes don't think that they know what the community really needs. And then when it fails, everybody's like, oh, we don't want to put any more money in that community. Well, did you ever think about the fact what you tried to do wasn't going to work?
I think it's something about the, it's about testing assumptions. Mm-hmm. Let's be honest with ourselves. You know, we all carry assumptions into every situation, but I think that what we've learned is, do you have the humility to test those assumptions? Do you have the integrity to go into those communities and say, hey, look, this is what we think. Now you tell us what's actually true. And I think that there's a tendency to overemphasize or overtrust our gut at times when really, you're not going to be right. You're going to be a little right, but really it's your community that can tell you if you are on the right path to something that's really viable and vital. And I think that when you have those instances, whether it's government or business or, private enterprise that comes in and says, oh, well, we know what you want. It's generally pretty assumption laden. I will say that in the product world, there have been a lot of lessons learned in terms of how you can do that genius-driven design, which has its place. But as soon as you step into anything more complicated than a piece of technology or a fixed product and anything that has social application, all of a sudden you step into a very social world, a world that's about culture and relationships, and you're moving away from do these headphones produce sound when I plug them into the jack? Into, do these relationships provide meaning? And is this the kind of thing I want to be engaged in and people want to be engaged with us with?
Yeah. And the one thing is, I know because I've done a lot of volunteering, working with homeless, working at shelters, feeding on, on the streets, going to rehab facilities. Trust is really important because outsiders are generally not trusted anyway. So just you have to come in there wanting to build a relationship or you're not going to be successful because they don't trust outsiders initially. And so I can see why that's really, really important. How does your organization differ from other agencies or consulting firms?
So I think one of the ways we differ the most is through that community-centered design methodology. I think because we're not designing for a single point of sale, because we're not designing for a single product, because we're not designing flashlights or, how to get people through a store faster in the case of maybe a more human-centered design outfit, it's really how do we develop relationships that you then, as the organization or commercial business, take over and are able to own and manage apart from context partners. We want to provide the strategic guidance for developing relationships between organizations and their consumers or grantees. And honestly, we see ourselves as initiating relationships and helping people to continue relationships and then helping people deepen those relationships. And when you look at, a typical design firm or an ad agency, they do wonderful work. I'm not here to decry their work. But what they're really doing is trying to get a message out or get a product designed.
Right.
Those are great. We need messages crafted and we need products designed.
Mm-hmm.
But what we do is, how do you create a relationship that provides value to mutual benefit to both parties over time? And that's a much harder social question, and that's why we call ourselves a social innovation design firm, is because we look at those innovations and those opportunities to develop those relationships. And it's also something that's never finished. I think that the key is that the market changes, community needs change, points of emphasis change.
Mm-hmm.
And we like to partner with organizations to navigate those changes.
So who are some of your clients, and how do you choose your clients? I mean, how do you choose who you're going to assist? And because I'm sure there's some that you say, no, there's nothing we can do for you. But how do you choose your clients?
It's a great question, and I think, you know, we choose our clients the same way I think that people choose their relationships. We look for alignment with our values. So Context Partners has a set of values, you know, and we look for clients who really align with those value sets. We don't like to segment, oh, we do nonprofit, or we do foundation, or we do commercial, or we do government. That's really not the point. To us, the point is, who shares our personal values, our organizational values as a firm? And if we see that fit, if we see that alignment between, yes, we agree that networks are important, yes, we agree that you should have a sense of wonder, yes, we agree that these things take practice, then that's a real key that we're in a good fit. If people are looking for kind of a one-off quick fix, it's really not the kind of thing that we're suited to do. I think there are other firms out there much better just suited to fix immediate quick things, but what we do is try to engage people over the long haul. And then when you look at some of our clients, we've worked with Nike, Nike Foundation, Black Male Engagement, the Rockefeller Foundation, among others. And I think that what makes all those clients that I've just mentioned really, really great fits is we see values alignment with the firm itself and with our clients. When we hold gatherings at our offices, we see our clients meeting each other. So we see a client from one engagement or one organization meeting a client from another organization, and then they hit it off, and then they're able to develop relationships.
Mm-hmm.
That's a key indicator that we've selected our clients well. So are people actually getting to know other people that they go, yeah, we'd want to do business together? And, you know, we're happy to be a part of that. But what we're really looking to do is create a community of people who practice in the way that we do.
You're talking about changing a whole mindset, because I know when I'm now we're in this Twitter world and Facebook world and everything's got an icon and everything is in 140 characters. It's so impersonal. So what you're talking about is actually, like I said, way back when I was younger, it was relational. It was about knowing, you know, your customers and knowing them by name. And I always used to wonder, how do they know my name? But it was just the manner in which they established businesses, because they knew there was competition, so they had to be different. You can play with the pricing and things like that, but when you actually get personal with someone, they want to come back just because they want someone to talk to. So you're talking about changing the mindset here.
Absolutely, and I think, ironically, all the digital information out there has kind of, has pushed a return to the relationship. I mean, when you look at trends like heritage brands coming back into vogue, when you look at trends like people even making their pictures look older than they are, you know, I think there's some signaling out there in what we see in popular culture that says, hey, I need that feeling of authenticity. I need that feeling of relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the one thing that those folks who, pre the web were able to do was they were able to kind of strip away all the things that were superfluous, because they didn't have any choice. You know, mm-hmm. They knew that the essence of the sale was the relationship. They knew that that they had to look somebody in the eye and, come back to them time and time again. They wanted to retain their customers, and they retained their customers through knowing about their kids, knowing about, you know, what they wanted, what their tastes were. And I think that over time, people have gotten really excited about the web, and the web's a wonderful tool, as we both know as we're working and speaking on it. But at the same time, it's still a tool to support relationships. And when you look at the most successful things on the web, what do? They support relationships, whether that's a Facebook or a LinkedIn or a Twitter or, you know, the things that really capture people's hearts and minds and attention are relationship driven. And I think that when you look at the kind of stuff that we've been designing, one of the differentiating factors in the networks we design is we do not design networks with intentionality. So this network has a reason for being. This has a goal. This has a purpose. I think that when you're designing networks that are intentional rather than serendipitous, that there is a craft to developing a type of relationship and interactions that people have within that network. And that's one thing that the community center design methodology allows us to do, is hone in on some pretty simple things. What do people need? What are people offering? And then how do people feel rewarded?
Definitely. I remember one of my first jobs was working for Borden Inc., which was Elsie the cow. And as a little girl, the milkman came to the door delivering milk twice a week and asking, oh, okay, you have a new child. Do you need more milk? Or do you want juice this week? Or do you want, you know, these other products? Or we have these new things we're introducing. Why don't you try it out and let me know? You know, it was so personal. I used to stand there and watch the interaction between the milkman or my mom or my father. And it was just so personal. It was like having an uncle come in delivering milk. And, you know, that's how that company grew. But then it lost its, you know, sense of community and, you know, just acquiring businesses to the point it just outgrew itself. And right now it doesn't exist anymore. And it was one of the largest corporations at the time I started working there. So those values of having that community and caring about, you know, your customers, it really is true. It can make a difference of you continuing to exist. Sometimes just having mass products is just not going to be enough, and especially with us getting involved in a global market, and you can buy products just about anywhere if it's just buying a product, you're going to find that the competition who can, you know, make their price lower is going to be a strong competition against you because you didn't develop those relationships. I'll tell you, I think this is just very, very valuable. It's very important. I know there are some places I go, I miss it because it's just not personal business anymore. You know, used to be able to get someone to wipe your windows at the car when you went to get gas, and now there's no one. You know, fill your tank, clean your own car off, everything. And it was just something you felt safe going into the gas station because you knew the gas attendant would be there to take care of you, to provide that service, to smile, to say, hey, let me check under your hood, you know, just in case. And it just made you feel really good. You felt that comfort. You felt like you were being taken care of. You felt like they cared. And if you were in trouble or you thought anything was wrong with that car, you made it across town over to the gas station with the man that came out there to ask you how things are going and let me check under the hood. Just that personal touch was just so important, and I'm hoping we do get back to this particular kind of business again and that mindset where we're all a community and we're all related and we're all a part of one another. We're getting ready to go to a break, but when we come back, we're going to talk even more.
Great.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Are you looking for innovative ideas on how to achieve your financial dreams? Tune in to Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday afternoon at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. Join certified financial planners Ken Smith and Ethan Broga to learn how you can obtain financial success. You'll be entertained while you discover techniques to alleviate your financial concerns. Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. Today's business marketplace is becoming increasingly global thanks to technologies that didn't even exist a few short years ago. Your business might be a startup, or you might be one of the global 500. Either way, you're probably looking at customers and competitors in faraway regions. Listen for Global Reach with host Tay Revez as she brings together experts, ideas, and listeners to help you anywhere in the world. Global Reach is broadcast every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
We're always talking business. Talk to an expert. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
Listening to A Sharp Outlook. To reach Angela Sharp or today's guest, please call into the program at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You may also send email to asharpeoutlook@gmail.com or tweet the program at asharpcons. Now, back to the program.
Well, just before the break, we were talking about how organizations outgrow themselves. How do you feel about that, Robert?
You know, I think the real threshold is for organizations and growth is when the growth outstrips the organization's ability to maintain the relationship. Mm-hmm. I think you can have a multi-billion-dollar business. I think you can be an auto manufacturer and still maintain a relationship with your customer that meets and exceeds their needs. But I think the example you gave about the milk company, Angela, that was really poignant is that, you know, there was a point at which they were able to establish a relationship with their consumer. And as they grew, that growth outstripped the relationship they could have. And I think that when you see, organizations, businesses that can retain an intimate and appropriate relationship at scale with their consumer, you really are starting to see great organizations. Mm-hmm. And I think we've seen I think some of the signals that they can still do that are when they're responsive to demand. I think one of the simplest examples of this is when you've seen large online entities like Facebook or Instagram. There's been public outcry about this privacy policy or this, mm-hmm. that thing, and they actually change in response.
Right.
Google's the same way. And so I think when you see these kind of organizations responding to their consumer and actually engaging in an authentic dialogue,
mm-hmm.
that's a signal that they are still able or making an honest attempt to really have a relationship with those consumers and customers. When that dialogue stops, and people stop listening, I think you have really ultimately some really unfortunate and sometimes catastrophic things happen, especially spending some time in Detroit. I think one of the difficulties that auto manufacturers faced is that they weren't able to listen and be in a dialogue with those people who purchased their products. And then as competition arose, there were people who were better at that simply.
Mm-hmm.
There are many complicated factors to the auto industry, and I'm not an expert there. But what I will say is that I think consumer insights and consumer relationships provide the critical information to make decisions, both at a tactical and strategic level.
Yeah, I think most companies need to not only have internal communications, but actually communication that's coming from the consumers themselves, and have ears where they're actually listening to what, you know, the consumer wants, what they like, what they don't like. You know, just making products and putting them out there when no one wants to buy it, it doesn't make sense, but it does happen when you become really large corporations and you just get this idea that, if we just push it enough, if we just
discounted enough, they're going to buy it. No, we don't like the product. And it's important to just, you know, be honest enough with yourself to admit, I developed something that is not going to sell, and take it off the market, because then I start feeling like, gosh, you just don't even care about what I like and I don't like. You're trying to force this down my throat. I'm never going to buy any of your products. You know, so that that kind of mindset comes in, because the last thing you want is a company trying to force, you know, something upon you. You want them to be bringing you the things that you actually enjoy, the things that you like. So that's really, to me, that's very, very important.
You know, and we found that that's true internally at organizations as well as externally with their consumers. So one of the things we do is employee engagement, and we found that while you're trying to build relationships with your consumer and your external, what we would call your external community, mm-hmm. That if you're not building your internal culture and community and building relationships with your employees that reflect your values, then you're never going to be successful building that kind of external community that you really want to. And I think that as we've engaged people in how they actually build a network-based business model, how they actually start to have a relationship at scale with their consumer, they start to look internally and say, huh, do we have that kind of relationship with each other, with our staff? Do we have that kind of relationship that drives reflects the kind of external community that we're trying to build? Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, your point too about the market is, it's flooded with products. I mean, there is a multiplicity of products in the marketplace. And I think that while that creates a lot of creative destruction and a lot of different options and potentially helps refine what makes it to the consumer, you see a lot of path dependency. You see a lot of, you know, features that don't suit consumers' needs. You see a lot of things that exist because they've always existed, not because a consumer in the current market actually needs it. And so I think that your point about just a flood of product without a relationship creates this kind of uneasiness about, well, great, we have more things than we could ever possibly consume, but do we have more relationships that are genuine and authentic that the products are a reflection of? And I think that that's when people get really excited, is these products are a reflection of an authentic relationship, not just another widget that I could spend my hard-earned money on.
Right. I like the idea that you're actually going into companies and working with the employees as well and building that community, because they're kind of like the front line of whatever product or service that you're providing. And if they haven't bought into, you know, what the organization is doing, it really does show in their personality when, you know, they're serving you. Or when you ask them, well, have you tried this? Well, no, I'm not going to buy that. So it's really important, you know, to have that internal and external. I mean, we are just, the world is just one big community, and I'm really big on this. And we all need to be able to have that authenticity in our communications, in the products we sell, in our interactions, and just actually having a company like yours, going back to building those relationships again and how we really are all a community in touch with one another. I'm just excited about this. How do you, one of the things I was wondering, how does a community benefit from working with Context Partners?
I think it benefits in a couple ways. We're trying to listen. We're trying to listen and respond. So I think that we're in many ways, we're trying to be our clients' ears within communities and trying to represent that authentic voice of community back to our clients. So I think that one of the benefits is just when communities are asking, is anybody listening? You know, we want to be the ones raising our hand saying, you know, we're listening. I think another way it benefits is community members actually end up in direct contact and participation ultimately with some of our clients. So our, one of the great stories from BME is we met a guy named Shaka, and Shaka really liked listening, liked having the conversation, liked talking about a network of black men. Shaka went on to become more and more involved in BME, and I was looking just yesterday, and you know, Shaka spent some time over at MIT as a guest there. He just got published in Wired Japan, and so you actually see community members directly benefiting from the relationship that we helped facilitate between our client and themselves. And so I think that when you talk about, you know, what kind of benefits can we see, I think those are the real, very, very tangible examples. Mm-hmm. I'll get another example. We did a customer loyalty program for a very, very large restaurant chain. And people from the community who we found, we took them to the conference where they met every year, the manager's conference with this large restaurant chain. And the community was front and center on stage with all these general managers of these restaurants telling their story of how they engage with this restaurant. These are super loyal champions of this organization. And I think that when you see them front and center, we can very tangibly point to things like that and say, this is bringing the community in contact with the organization, not in a numbers way, not in a survey way, not in a statistical way, but in a very, very deep and human way. And it was just remarkable to see that kind of relationship being established between the restaurant and the consumer.
Now, this is a question that kind of made me, after, you know, reading about your organization and things like that, and then you going out and working with BME, you know, we have laws and policies that, you know, seem to promote poverty. What can be done to change a mindset? Can context partners go into that community and work with them to, you know, establish businesses or make some changes about that?
I think that, you know, I, as far as laws and policies, I think that one thing that we try to do is we help to ensure that our clients are equipped to do that, but also our clients bring ideas to us often about how that can happen. In the case of BME, BME's founder, Tribune Shorters, said, look, we're going to start with this. We're going to start with the approach and the thought that black men are assets to America and to the world at large. And once we start there, we can have a real conversation about what we want to do together. But until we start there and until we have that orientation, you know, that's really not the conversation that we want to have. And I feel like often it's our clients bringing that authentic voice into community and saying, look, you know, this is the kind of orientation that puts us in a proper relationship with each other. So while context partners, we're very glad to help facilitate those types of relationships. It's really our clients who are bringing those kind of opportunities to us to design for and help facilitate.
Well, we're getting ready to come up to the close of our show, but I wanted to know, what would you tell folks who want to know more about your organization?
Sure. It's one, just talk to us. We love talking to people. Talk to me. You can find me at robert@contextpartners.com. We're on the web, contextpartners.com. We're pretty easy to find. I would also say that really, you know, the power of networks and the fit with our clients is something that we really treasure and is really near and dear to everybody on staff. So I think that if you know a context partners person, you can find us on LinkedIn. You can find us all over the place. Call us, send us an email, just start a relationship with us, because that's what we really love. You can see our methodology on our site and get a sense of what we do and who our clients are and what we've done. And I think that those are the simplest ways, and we would love to hear from you.
Wonderful. Well, I want to say thank you for being on our show today. I think this is information that our listeners can take and run with it, because building relationships are needed everywhere, and so I'm hoping that they make those phone calls. Thank you, Robert, for being with us today.
Thank you, Angela. This was a pleasure.
Thank you. So next week we will have our show, and we're going to be talking about mentors and businesses finding mentors to assist them in getting the right advice and going the right directions and knowing what they really need to do. So there's an organization that provides mentors, and so that's who our guest will be next week. We just want to say thanks to Robert again for this valuable information, and this was just a very exciting show. So we're going to wrap up, but I hope you tweet me, Facebook me, email me, send your questions, contact me if you have need further information, want to know anything more about our guest, and look forward for you tuning in again next week. Thank you very much.
Thank you again for tuning into A Sharp Outlook. Please join your host, Angela Sharp, next Thursday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time, on the Voice America Business Channel. Tune in again next week.